New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Once you learn that pay negotiation should be a collaborative discussion, and there are specific ways that you can go through that, that take the risk off the table, that's when the light bulb comes on and it's like, oh, I didn't realize I could still be a nice person and get everything that I want from the pay package.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. Money. It can't buy you love or happiness, or so the saying goes. But there's good research that having more of it, higher income, savings, is associated with more happiness. And more independence, less stress, better health, even more power. But most people don't like talking about money. Well, not today. Today we're going to talk about how most people leave a lot of money on the table by not negotiating their salary when they start new roles. And with the rate people change jobs today, switches that are essentially your biggest raises, not negotiating your pay package is tragic. Just how much are you leaving behind? One estimate put not negotiating your salary at $1 million over the length of your career. Another version of that, you'll need to work eight more years to make up choosing to not negotiate. The brutal truth is that most people don't negotiate their offers, or they even lowball themselves during the process out of fear, reluctance, or our topic today, simply not knowing how to smartly go about it. So who better to help us relieve the stress of negotiating our salary than my guest today, an expert on the topic, John Gates, the salary coach. John is an industry veteran who, for the bulk of his career, has served as global HR and recruiting director for Fortune 500 companies. Yes, he has designed those processes that you go through, and by his count, has extended more than 75,000 offers. So he knows the way companies think and work. Now, he continues to consult those companies, but he also brings that insight to job seekers, helping them negotiate better pay packages through one-on-one VIP coaching and his excellent book, pick it up on Amazon, Act Your Wage. I love the title. It's a compact and practical guide. So today's show is all about how to maximize what you are getting for what you're giving at work. And by the end, you should leave with less fear when it comes to negotiations, but also super practical tips like when to negotiate, it's not always when you think, and how to say it, answer, even frame it, like when you get that loaded question, what salary are you expecting? John, fantastic and pleasure to have you on 97% Effective.
Thanks, Michael. What a great introduction that was. You really teed up the subject. I don't know that I could have done that better myself, so thank you.
John, before we even dive in, I feel like we are kindred souls, right? I'm an executive coach who focuses on power and politics because I really saw a lot of great people not get ahead in organizations. And that really got me frustrated because there were simple things that they didn't realize about the way organizations worked and how you advanced and moved up in your career. I feel like there is an important backstory here as to why you became the salary coach and you do what you do.
Sure. Yeah, there is a backstory and it starts long ago in my recruiting career. So about 5 years into my career journey, I was just kind of getting out from under college debt. I was very, very poor and finally got my first corporate recruiting job after slaving away in agencies for a few years. So I worked for that company as a technical recruiter for 3.5 years until the marketing department made a terrible mistake and introduced a whole generation of products that were completely mismatched with the market. And so when sales go in the tank, the CEO gets pressure from investors to cut expenses until the ship can be righted. How many of us have heard that story in our career? Probably most of us. So that was a dream job. I just purchased a new home 6 months ago, and I had two infant sons. You know, one was newborn and the other was like a year and a half old. So there was a lot riding on this career, and I found myself laid off at that juncture. And I was terrified, just like everyone else is. I was terrified that I would lose my house. I was terrified that I'd lose my beat up Volkswagen Super Beetle that I drove around. And I was kind of out on the skinny branches of financial solvency in those days. So I cast the resume to the four winds to see if I could land quickly. And I ended up getting all the phone calls that everybody gets from people like me. And they call you and they'll say, hey, John, what's it going to take financially to get you to move to Alabama or to Louisiana or to Chicago? What's your salary requirement? And I realized I was very unprepared to answer those questions, even though I was asking them all day long in the job that I had. So I finally got this opportunity to interview with Capital One in Virginia. I lived in Oregon at the time, and that's where I live now. But it was going to mean a relocation about as far away from Oregon as you can go. So I fly out there to interview in person, and I go through their interview process, which is the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, it was tough. Very tough. I had to pass 23 different behavioral competencies in interviews. And if I failed even one of those, I was not getting an offer. That's how demanding it was. There were 3 written tests. And if I failed the cut score on any one of those, I was not going to get an offer. And they also had a business case interview, which is like they give you a business situation and a bunch of data and numbers, and you have to go do calculations on a whiteboard in front of an audience and ask their follow-up questions, make a recommendation. It was a real challenge. So after I get finished with all that, I'm sitting there in the interview room and my recruiter walks in, the person who's recruiting me to Capital One. He sits down across from me as I'm wiping sweat off. And he says, John, I'm just going to level with you. His name was Chip, by the way. And he said, our system is designed to decline 90% of people who interview. I've interviewed over 20 people for this job. You and one other person are the only ones who've passed the process. He just withdrew. The other guy just withdrew. So what's it going to take to get you to say yes and come here? Move your family from Oregon to Richmond, Virginia. So I suddenly felt flush with leverage. I never felt that before. So I said, well, I want a bigger salary. I want a signing bonus. Let's talk about the bonus incentive itself. And, oh, what relocation plan are you offering me? And is there any way we can enrich that? So I got everything I asked for very, very quickly. And then I spent the next 3 years wondering what I might have left on the table in that situation. Like, it haunted me. I wondered if I could have gotten something even better. And maybe yes, maybe no. I just didn't know how to handle that at the time. So also being just freshly laid off as a recruiter, I started tracking how much my candidates were leaving on the table when I would close out job offers. And I set a goal to cover my annual salary every month in negotiation savings for my employer, thinking that that might insulate me from future layoffs. And I was able to achieve that goal most months. So I get an offer approved. Let's say the offer was at 150, or I could go as high as 150. I could extend an offer at 135. Maybe I close at 142. That's an $8,000 savings, plus the signing bonus maybe that I didn't have to use, right? So you get the idea. Very quickly, they started asking me to train the other recruiters on how to track this information and how to improve their negotiations. So I kind of became the in-house negotiation guy. And over time, I became the head of global recruiting for multiple Fortune 500 companies, training large teams of recruiters on how to do this. And I started trying to cover the whole talent acquisition budget just with negotiation savings. That was something unique that I did for my employers. So through that journey, I started helping my friends and family, you know, the people that we are, they're in our inner circle. We help them for free, no matter what, because we love them and we want to help them. And I started showing myself and them how I could improve their offers. Over the years, I refined a method for this. And then I started wondering, I wonder if I could help people that I don't even know. And that's kind of how Salary Coach and the Salary Coach Academy began and got started. Started helping people I didn't even know. Started proving that the concept would work, that the method would work, that it was reliable. That's kind of the story, though, of how it all got started. And to this day, executives hire me to maximize their next job offer while reducing the risk of that process to almost zero. And I think that's the important aspect of what I offer. Most people don't want to talk about pay because of the risks and the stakes. That's what pushes them into the corner. That's why they leave so much money on the table. They don't know how to have these conversations, and they're unwilling to put the offer at risk.
So, John, you've already alluded to it's this fundamental question here at the beginning of why should you negotiate? And just sharing, you know, your really rich experience on the other side of the table, you've already shared that there is a range, right? The company's already come up with something, and it sounds like many of the recruiters are lowballing, which many people right off the bat may not realize. But what is the top reason why people should be negotiating?
Well, I would say the biggest reason is that you're leaving a big pile of lifetime earnings on the table. It's not just what you're going to get today. It's what you're going to get tomorrow. Salary or incentives or things that are ongoing compensation, they pay you every time you get paid. And if you spend the next few years at a company, it's going to stack up on you. And then when you move from job to job, like your current pay package becomes the floor for what you want to get into the future. Future employers have to match or exceed that number. And it just compounds over the years. You brought the $1 million example into the conversation really early. For some people, it could be a lot more than that. I think most people are leaving money on the table and they don't even know why. They don't know how much. Here's an example. I worked with a C-level client, a C-suite client, chief operating officer, and he's in between jobs. He gets an offer and he calls me and he says, John, I think the offer is good enough. And so I walked him through the process of exploring what is possible on the offer, hand walked him through that process, and we ended up enriching his offer by $613,000. Some of it's one-time money, some of it's improvement in the incentive plan, stuff like that. That's not available for everybody. That was the new high watermark in my career as a salary coach. But $613,000 is like, that's a couple of Ferraris maybe. It was actually quite a simple, low-risk process to see if that money was on the table. So why should people negotiate? Because it's the money's there. It's usually already approved. And even if it isn't, they want to hire you. You don't have to twist their arm to get it. If you know the safe path through the minefield, like if you have the map to the minefield, it's pretty easy. There's no reason not to do it.
Yeah. And you offer all this. I alluded to your book, Act Your Wage. You really lay out the whole process. Obviously, we can't talk about the entire book, but I've picked out some sections there that I think are really useful and counterintuitive, or things that people don't think about. I will ask you here at the beginning, right? The show is about hard truths. And while you have many insights, you have dealt with lots of negotiations on both sides of the table. Is there one hard truth that people really need to pay attention to when it comes to negotiating salary offers?
Yeah, I think this is what comes to mind right away with that question. That is, people tend to victimize themselves in this process. If you don't have the right information, you are going to victimize yourself in one way, shape, or form. You're going to lowball yourself somewhere along the way. Fear and high stakes is what drives people into the corner on this. Some of my clients negotiate multi-million dollar deals as just a matter of course. You know, they are good negotiators. But as soon as the salary conversation starts, they realize, wow, there's a real shift in the stakes here. Let's imagine for a second you were the VP of sales for a company and you're doing $2, $3, $5, $20 million deals just as a regular part of your job. You think you know how to negotiate. The stakes are the same, only if your boss comes into your office and says, Michael, there's an important deal coming up, and if you don't close it, you're fired. Mm-hmm. You can play all you want with other people's money, but as soon as it's your money and it's your mortgage and it's your financial future and it's your reputation and your career is on the line, like, the stakes become so high for people that it shoves them down the, I think this offer is good enough path. And that's how people victimize themselves, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, and how we're often our kind of worst enemies. But that is a tricky thing, right? When it's on the line, you're there. Is there a process or a mindset or a simple kind of hack to kind of reframe that you find is effective?
Yeah, I think having a proven process that works is part of that. Like, just knowing what to say at every step and mm-hmm. understanding why that works, the light bulbs just come on. It's like, oh, well, that makes sense. I never thought of that before. It's not rocket science. It's a process that anyone can learn. And once you understand that, well, here's another thing. I think that fear of loss and the amplification of the stakes, it's a result of a misunderstanding of what pay negotiation is. So if you'd permit me, we can get down this path just a little bit. I think most people think that it's a game of chicken. It's a coin toss. You know, I'm going to demand A, B, and C. And if they say no, they're going to pull my offer. And, or maybe you believe that negotiation is high conflict. It's a duel to the death. And if that's what you think negotiation is, then of course you're going to say, well, the stakes are too high. I'm not going to duel to the death over this because of the potential of loss. But what if I told you that that's not the way pay negotiation should be? I think most people will, if you Google the topic, you'll get a lot of recommendations that say, like, do your research and demand what you're worth and all that. That's an ultimatum heavy strategy that introduces a lot of risk. So I think pay negotiation, once you learn that pay negotiation should be a collaborative discussion, and there are specific ways that you can go through that take the risk off the table, that's when the light bulb comes on and it's like, oh, I didn't realize I could still be a nice person and get everything that I want from the pay package. I thought I had to be a jerk to get this done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a good thing to add in right here.
Yeah. So to think about it as collaborative problem solving versus I win, you lose. As you speak, John, you have a very calm and collaborative problem solving manner. What is a simple phrase to give the counter offer or start that discussion? What's a way to do that in that spirit?
Yeah. Okay. So I think if I can just lay out a bit of the salary coach method for you here. Like, when you get an offer, I think it's important to ask a bunch of questions. You want to ask questions for a variety of reasons, but if you ask the right questions, you're not going to put the offer at risk. Nobody that extends an offer to you is going to recoil in horror if you ask some questions about the offer. This is normal. This is what people like me expect. In fact, we like it when you do this. So ask a bunch of questions about the offer. I like to frame this in a way that's like, first of all, you want to know what's included and what's not included. You want to ask what's possible in this process. And that's a soft, easy way of exploring or opening a collaboration conversation. Would it be possible to do X? Would it be possible to do Y? And if you do this in the right way, through this process, kind of a discovery process, you can discover what is fixed and firm, what's already maximized, where there might be some opportunity to adjust. And so as you're thinking about what a counteroffer might include, you shouldn't ask for things that they can't do. That's high risk. You should ask for things that they can do, or give them multiple choice options instead of this or nothing. And I think that's where a counteroffer kind of enters the high risk zone. If you do a counteroffer and you say, here's what I want. I want another $80,000 in salary and $100,000 signing bonus. If that's what you're offering, they can come back and say no. And that might result in the offer being rescinded. So you could frame it in a way so that it's multiple choice. And you can say, here are three ways that I think we can address the obstacles that are in front of us. We both want the same thing. So based on our discussions, there's option A, option B, option C. Which one do you think would be the easiest? So is this starting to make some sense? Like you're finessing through the finish line conversations. You both want the same thing. You're just trying to get to what they can do and what will satisfy you as well.
Yeah. To look for that win-win. I love what you said there. A takeaway is start asking questions to look for what is possible and framing it in multiple ways. Yeah. A beautiful way of leading that discussion. I think a very practical takeaway.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, Executive Coach Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
Big section of your book is about when to negotiate. And we jumped right into one, the offers on the table. And this is the moment most people think, okay, now I'm going to negotiate. What I liked about your book, which is the counterintuitive part, is that you reference the fact that receiving the offer is not the beginning of the negotiation. It actually happens long before that. And you talk through different touch points, application, screener, before you even get to the hiring manager. What do you mean by the when the negotiation starts? I think it's a really useful point in your book.
Yeah, I think one of the points I like to make in the book and in other places is that negotiation is a process and not an event. What I mean by that is many people believe that the negotiation starts when you have numbers in front of you to negotiate. And by then it's a bit too late, and I'll explain why. There's a process that you go through that leads up to an offer. You're going to go through a screening process. You're going to go through interviews. Then following the interview, there's usually a powwow that I would organize as a recruiter or the head of recruiting. I'd call up the hiring manager and say, Michael, you've interviewed four people. Let's get the interview team together. We'll discuss who you want to hire, why you want to hire them. And then once you've made your selection, we're going to figure out what we think that offer should be. Then the terms that we think would be good based on our conversations with the candidate and everything else, that floats up to an approval committee of some kind. It might be the compensation team at the company. It might be the board of directors, depending on who, what the level of the job is. Somebody outside the hiring manager usually has to approve. So that hiring manager is going to go to that approval committee and make the case and justify the offer. They're going to say, I want to hire Jane because Jane can solve these problems for us. She was far and away the best candidate. Here's the offer that I would like to approve. And sometimes a negotiating range gets put in there, so you don't have to go through that process a second time. But there's some political capital that goes into that process. So let's say you get down to the finish line and you begin to negotiate at the finish line, realizing you've got a lowball offer that's 30% low. When people call me at the finish line and they say, John, help me, I got a lowball offer, what can you do to help? I can do something to help, but we're probably not moving that offer up 30% because they've already gone through this approval process. We can do some refining at the end, but what bracket you fit into, like what level and grade, all those kind of things are decided earlier in the process. So it's usually if somebody gets a lowball offer, it's because they've made mistakes earlier in the process, during the phone screen, during the interview process. And I help people to avoid those mistakes and build their value so that the offer you get at the finish line is already in the right, you know, zone. And then we're just tweaking. That's the best way of doing it. Does that help?
Yeah. Thinking about that as a process. What if you're asked early in the process, application, the first screen, what's your salary expectation, right? This is the one where people have that fear. Well, I might lowball myself or I might price myself out of the market. They're not even going to take me through the process if they think so. What is a deft way to answer that when you get it early?
I'm glad you asked that question because it is the one thing that makes the blood run cold at the early part of the process. And people do believe that. And I've seen a variety of responses to this. Here's the silver bullet. I'll give you the silver bullet. Use this if you want to or not. But instead of giving them a number in response to that question, you should respond with a range. And here's why. When you get a phone call, let's say you apply for a position and then the phone rings and they want to talk to you about the job. This is a screening call. And everybody, I think, who gets one of those knows it's a screening call, and they know if they answer that salary requirement question wrong, they might not get the chance to interview. They want the chance to interview. So this is a common mistake. People will answer that question with a number that is on the low side, thinking it improves the chance to interview. And then once they interview, they're thinking, well, maybe I can improve this number over time. Well, once you give a number, it's really hard to come off the number. So instead of answering the question with a number, you should answer with a range. The recruiter, the person who's screening you, does not want to tie up the time of the interview team, who is short-staffed, with somebody that they cannot close in the end. So a big question that recruiter is asking themselves is, can I get you? Are you gettable? If you give them a number that's within their number line range, then they've satisfied that in their mind. They think they can get you, and they think they can get you at that number. So if you respond with a range, then as long as your range overlaps their range, you're probably going to satisfy this. And if you're giving a range, it also gives you the opportunity to move up in your range as you interview. So it's a primary strategy, and it's a secret that most people don't know. If you just learn this one thing from this podcast, that you should use a range instead of a number in these early conversations, that right there is going to save you a lot of money.
That's golden. And the follow-up question to that is, knowing the range, I imagine, is doing your research, right? Kind of knowing comparables, or even from the company's perspective, how valuable your position, tight the market is, et cetera. So I guess there is some sense there that you're doing your homework in advance to come up with that.
Yeah, you should do your homework. But the very best data, and the data that a company can never argue with, is what other companies are offering you. Mm. So I think in that phone screen process, you can do some research on what they would be willing to offer you if you were successful. You get them to cough up their range, and now you have another data point of what you're worth. What does the market actually see you? You've submitted a resume, you're qualified, you fit that job. Now you're going to get a data point that's pretty hard data point that no one can argue with. And if you do this a few times, like, you're going to have a few of them. So now you can start introducing things like, well, I'm discussing with other companies, and this is the range that I'm considering based on those conversations.
Yeah. Now, John, also all this time we have been, you know, I talked about money, we talked about salary, and you do talk in the book that it's not just salary. Mm-hmm. It's total compensation. There are many variables. In fact, in your story, right, there's relocation, there's additional bonuses. Now there's stock options, right, with a lot of tech companies. And you say in the book, you want to use that to your advantage to improve your negotiation.
Yes.
Say more about that. That's also very useful for people to be thinking about.
I love this topic because so many people get fixated on the salary number. They can sometimes screen out opportunities that would give them a much bigger total pay package. An example I use in the book is comparing two potential offers. One is high salary, but has low incentives. And the temptation might be to pick that offer over the other. But if you figure the value of all the incentives and even things like the 401k match or how much money the company is willing to put into healthcare, you know, things like this can tip the scales of lifetime earnings from one company to the next. It's important to realize too that every company has their own pay philosophy. You know, some companies they pay everything in salary. There's no incentive at all. That's their philosophy. That's what they want to do. Other companies want to put pay at risk. And high performers tend to like pay at risk, but pay at risk is not guaranteed. So you can use these things to kind of play off against each other. Here's an example. So you're working, maybe you've got two opportunities. One's a publicly traded company that has stock as part of their package. Another is a privately held company. And because they're privately held, they don't have stock. So let's say you would prefer to work for the privately held company with no stock. The fact that they don't offer stock is kind of a gap in their offer package. You could be lured there by a big salary, but they know because they're competing against companies that offer stock all the time for employees. They know that this is something they can't offer. They also know they have to make up that gap in some other way. So you can use this to bring them into a better cash offer. And if you don't, you're missing an opportunity. And there are a lot of ways to enrich the cash side of things. Now, the shoe's on the other foot. You can talk to the other company. You can say, well, I love that you're offering equity. Like, I really want that. I see that as a big part of my long-term wealth building strategy. But we all know that I can't pay my bills with equity that vests over 3 years. So what can we do to improve the cash position? Because this other company is offering me more upfront cash, which is guaranteed.
Yeah.
You see what I'm doing here? So you can kind of play it off against one against the other.
Yes. So very much thinking about the total compensation, all of the pieces and how they fit together, where the company's coming from. And I'll jump to another piece that I like, perhaps because I coach around power, this idea you talk about of leverage, but you frame it as gentle leverage. and so you just here alluded to kind of in a collaborative way. You can't offer stock, therefore, you know, cash, because I've got this other offer or my current compensation. Is that what you mean by gentle leverage, or another example here of how to artfully employ that to your benefit?
Yeah, this is something that comes into play a lot with my coaching clients, and it's an individualized nuance. I think of leverage as in this conversation as the balance of power. So when you are early on in the discussion, let's say you're talking to a screener, you have almost no leverage at that point because nobody else at the company has fallen in love with you yet. And the recruiter or the front-end screener could put you in the screen-out pile and nobody else at the company would ever know that that happened. You don't have a lot of leverage early on. And as you move through the process, you want to go through this process of building your leverage. And at some point, you might feel the balance of power shift. You might sense that the company's holding most of the cards at a certain point, and then maybe you reach a point where you start to feel like you're holding more of the cards. And so you have to be aware of this subtle shift of the balance of power. And then when the power is on your side, you don't want to hit them over the head like a sledgehammer. Like, leverage can be used like a sledgehammer, or it could be used like a pry bar. And I think you want to use it like a pry bar in this situation. Because if you use it like a sledgehammer, you twist their arm or you force them to give you something, that might damage relationships on the way in. It might be the fast track to a rescinded offer, which nobody wants. You just want to gently use the leverage that you have to maximize the offer. In other words, we're trying to get what they would normally feel good about giving you. You don't want to push it to the point where they feel like you're robbing them in some way. That's usually, you're going into the high risk zone. And I wouldn't enter that zone unless you received an offer that was just unacceptable, period, end of story. And it has to be at a different threshold or the conversation's over for you. That's okay if the conversation's over for you, but you don't want it to be over for them.
So don't hit them over the head, right? Don't damage the relationship. Do it in a collaborative, gentle way.
Yeah, build your leverage. Use it cautiously and carefully in a way that's going to build the relationship, not put it at risk.
John, you've had so many clients. There is a lot of research on women versus men in terms of their propensity to negotiate. Men do it over half the time, often kind of sledgehammer techniques. Women tend to do it less. Women underestimate more consistently how much they're worth or what their packages are. Men overestimate what they're worth. I am curious of, do you see many differences when you're working with women or men clients, how they think about it or how they should even be approaching it? Because they're, women do fear backlash a lot of times if they become more assertive. Mm-hmm.
They certainly do.
Even gently leveraging can sometimes be perceived as being overly aggressive.
Yeah, I think this is a, when I was writing my book, Act Your Wage, I did some research of my own. I interviewed over 100 salary job seekers at various levels, and I asked both men and women different questions. It was quite interesting what came out of that. I asked men, who do you think has the advantage in pay negotiations, men or women? And I asked women the same thing. And this is what I learned from that. I learned that men's biggest fear is losing the offer at the finish line. Women's biggest fear was damaging relationships on the way in. That was a big obstacle for them. They did not want to damage relationships, and almost none of the men were concerned about that. That's one of the reasons why I talk about gentle leverage so much and I talk about collaboration so much, because it's a system that works for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not high conflict. The chances that you'd be accused of instead of being assertive, now you're aggressive. That is, all the research shows that women can be perceived in that way. So you have to be careful, but this negotiation process that I champion is a way to showcase your collaboration skills. And I think most of my clients actually build their reputation and they build their relationships on the way in instead of putting them at risk.
What about towards the end? A lot of people are you know, the close. Is there an approach there where you just have to kind of draw the line?
You can, but it depends. I think most of the time there isn't actually a counteroffer. Instead, there's a collaboration discussion and you reach a verbal agreement. And that's the way it goes most of the time with my clients. So then you're just putting what you verbally agreed to in writing. Then they revise the offer letter and you're done. There may be a counteroffer that goes out, in which case I would recommend you offer two or three different options. And you're pointing out, like, you have to give them a reason to adjust to you. It's important to remember that they want you to say yes. They've identified you. They selected you. They've gone through all this work to find you. They want you to say yes. And you want to say yes. So you're just showing them the path to yes. And there are two or three different things. One kind of soft close that I sometimes will use, and this requires that you have an interview pipeline ready, right? So I want most of my clients to be interviewing and actively in multiple places. So we spend a lot of time building that pipeline up. And here's an interesting kind of low risk close. If you're in that situation where you really want to put a counter offer on the table, you can test the water some by saying, I'm in an active job search and I've agreed to interview at another company next week. I'm in the final stages and, you know, I'm a person of my word. I feel like I really should keep that commitment, even though I'm super excited about this offer. In fact, I'd rather work for you. So if we can make these minor adjustments to the offer and you can give me A, B, and C, then I will say yes right now. If not, that's okay. But I feel like I need to go through this interview process next week before I can make a decision. Believe me, they don't want you to go through that interview process next week. So they might give you everything you've asked for. They might come back and say, well, we can't do all of that, but we can do some of it. Here's what we can do. And that's a way that you can maximize your offer by reducing the risk. You don't want to just toss an ultimatum out there to say, I want this. You can give them a choice. Take me off the market now. Or wait a week and roll the dice. I'm okay either way. Just let me know what you prefer. Both of those, by the way, keeps your offer on the table.
Right. Yeah. So this is that gentle leverage. It's thinking about the entire process. And again, I want to emphasize this, you know, in your book, a lot of it is how to say it. Like you said at the very beginning, understanding the process, demystifying the process, and feeling like you have the language of how to respond and navigate that process.
Right.
John, I know we live in interesting times as well. So I really want to ask this question. You have definitely, you know, been through this for years on both sides of the table. Now with AI and new technology, for the job seekers out there thinking about negotiation, all the parts of the process, are there ways you've seen it used to really help job seekers?
Yeah, in fact, I use AI with my clients all the time to help them prepare for interviews in particular. So there are some AI prompts and scripts that I use with my clients to help them prep. So you can use AI to predict, for example, what interview questions you might be asked, what interview topics you might be asked based on who's interviewing you and your resume, the job description, all that stuff. I started creating an interview sparring partner, actually, to go into the Salary Coach Academy. And when it's finished, and I hope that it'll be finished even by the time this airs, you'll be able to upload your resume and the job description of the position you're interviewing for. The chatbot will go into verbal mode, so it will verbally ask you interview questions that you can then verbally respond to. And you can keep doing this. She'll never get tired. You could go 10 hours straight, just lubricating your brain cells with practicing random interview questions just being thrown at you. And at the end, when you're ready to stop, When this is finished, she'll be able to give you feedback on how well you did and how you can improve your performance. So this is going to be a free throw-in once it's finished. It'll be part of the Salary Coach Academy for anybody that is a subscriber over there.
Amazing. And clearly leveraging the new tools of today to, I mean, like we talked about at the beginning, maximize what you're getting for what you're giving.
Right.
And I like the fact that the sparring partner doesn't get tired. So I want to hear at the, I know we're going to hit time here, John, and I want to hear the things that you are offering out to people. Was there before that any question, important question that we missed that you would call out? I think it was very thorough in terms of the way you approach and think about negotiations.
There's something that I would say that we didn't really cover. We kind of alluded to it a little bit, and that is don't accept the offer immediately that comes at you. There's going to be a huge temptation for you to say yes, and there will be a lot of pressure on you to say yes. They want you to say yes. And most people do. Like in my experience, 80%+ of people say yes to the initial offer, and they're almost all of them leaving money on the table. Here's the reason why. Once they extend you an offer, as I mentioned earlier, they want you to say yes. And anytime somebody wants something from you in the world of negotiation, you can almost always ask for something in return. It's kind of a bedrock principle of negotiation in any setting. So you have the most leverage, the most power you will ever have in this whole process is between the time that you get an offer and when you say yes. That's when you have this power to and the leverage to gently ask for more, to explore what's possible. So that's the biggest takeaway for that is you have this power. Don't squander it by saying yes too quick.
Is a simple way to do that just to buy yourself more time? I need to go back and take this to the family. I never make a decision in a day.
Sure. Yeah. And there are some basic scripts, but really I think you need to flex around what's natural for you. Mm-hmm. And I give my clients several different options for this, but usually the one is that I have a family or I have stakeholders that have a stake in the decision. I really want to go talk it over with them. That also buys my clients a little time to catch up with me. You know, they can call me right then. And then we can build a strategy together for how we can maximize the offer.
Yeah, John, let's talk about how do you work with clients? It sounds like there's coaching. There's a course that you referred to, the academy you referred to as well. Of course, your book. Mm-hmm. How do people work with you? What does that process look like? And how do they find you?
Sure. So you can reach me through the Salary Coach Academy, which is salarycoachacademy.com. And when you go over there, what you're going to find is a collection of video lessons of me teaching what to say and how to say it at every single step of the process. It is not me coaching you, but it is there and it's accessible to almost anyone at any level. And it's a tremendous resource. So people who go through that are achieving big gains in their offer and their anxiety level around these conversations is going way, way down. You can also hire me as a coach. And so when you do that, you have unlimited access to me. I'll be there with you through the whole thing. And I think one of the biggest mistakes people make in this whole process is thinking they have to do it alone. You do not have to do this alone. Having somebody at your side who knows the ins and outs of the process is incredibly valuable. So if anybody would like to explore these options, they can hit me up directly at john@salary.coach. Just send me a message and we'll start a conversation. I'd love to help you through this.
And those links, addresses will be down in the show notes. John Gates, the Salary Coach, author of Act Your Wage. Absolute pleasure to have you on today. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.